Hello and welcome to Loving Your Garden Live, Better Gardening Podcast in association with our sponsors, Fitzgerald Lane Decorators. I'm Rod Whiting, Loving Your Garden Group founder, and this week we're turning our attention to indoors and houseplants. And in a moment, I'll introduce our guest, and that's Jane Perrone. First, let me welcome our resident horticulturist, John Stirland. Hello, John.
Hello, Rod. Hello, everybody.
Let me introduce our guest this week, gardening journalist, podcaster, and houseplants expert, Jane Perrone. Jane, it's lovely to see you.
Thank you for having me. It's lovely to be here.
Jane, we've often seen your work in the national press. The Guardian comes to mind, but you're an author too. Just give us a sort of 45-second biog of who you are and what you're known for.
So I'm a journalist by training, but a lifelong gardening enthusiast with a particular passion for houseplants. And I started off in news journalism. And then when I had children, I decided to move into the rather calmer waters of gardening journalism. And so I became gardening editor at The Guardian, where I was already working. And I did that job for about 9 years. So I was working with people like Alice Fowler and many very great garden writers. So I did that. And then I went freelance in 2017. And by that time, I'd already started my podcast On the Ledge, which is about houseplants. I have the author of two books. My first book was called The Allotment Keeper's Handbook, which came out in 2008. And my book that came out this spring is Legends of the Leaf, which is a houseplant book. And then the latest thing that I've just published is this. It's not a book. It's a box. It's a houseplant gardener in a box. So, yeah, I love talking about houseplants, basically.
I'll hold my version up. Here we go. I've got to say it's fantastic, but we'll talk about that in a little bit and put it to the test as well. I thought it'd be good, actually, to start off. I'm not going to judge everybody by my total ignorance when it comes to houseplants, but I suspect there may be many like me who are very keen gardeners, but who may not necessarily have the same knowledge and experience when it comes to indoor plants. So can we sort of start by busting a few myths about about houseplants, and maybe making people like me, who have had a lot of failures with houseplants, feeling a little bit better and perhaps a bit more hopeful.
Okay, well, it's very common. I hear this a lot when I go and talk to gardening groups about houseplants, that people report that, oh, yeah, I love gardening outside, but all my houseplants die. And I'm not going to say that indoor gardening, caring for houseplants, is harder than outdoor gardening. But what you need to bear in mind is the fact that your houseplants are entirely dependent on you. So there is no rainfall coming to rescue you. There is not going to be any, you know, the light is lower. You have to provide everything for that plant. The roots can't go questing off. You need to repot that plant when the roots have filled the pot. So in a way, it's a different game than outdoor gardening, and the challenges are different. You're not having the same kind of challenges with the weather that you might get, but you are having the challenge that you need to really understand how your houseplants grow in the wild in order to understand how to grow them in your home. And so I always say to people that the stereotype is, the main way you kill your plants is by too much water, by overwatering. Actually, the absolute key is light. That is the thing that determines the success of your houseplants. But it's all tied together, light and water, because the more light your plant's getting, the more water it's probably going to need. So you've got to try to get into the mindset of your houseplant, understand why it's evolved to grow the way it has, and then think about whether you can supply anything like those conditions in your house. And if you can't, then don't have that plant. So, for example, if you've got north-facing windows and they're all quite small in your house, you're not going to have success with cacti and succulents unless you supply extra light in the form of grow lights. If all your windows are huge south-facing bays, ferns are going to struggle unless you move them well away from those windows. So you've got to think about your conditions and what the plants actually need and try to match those up.
It's similar sort of principle to outdoors, really, isn't it? When you think, although houseplants are more tropical, but, you know, we put plants outside in the right place, and it's more important that you you put the indoor ones in the right place. You mentioned that north-facing window, which is perfect for things like Phalaenopsis hybrids and, you know, the orchids and things like that. So the other thing I find, Jane, is that humidity is important as well with a lot of plants because, you know, we put the central heating on and the air suddenly becomes very dry. You perhaps have somebody around for tea when the central heating's on. The first thing you do is drop to sleep because, you know, the air's dry and it's nice and warm and, you know, you drop to sleep. And, you know, plants need that little bit of humidity as well, don't they?
Absolutely. As you say, when the heating comes on, you know, if you've got plants close to radiators, you know, the air humidity can drop below 20%. Really, for most houseplants, it needs to be 40 to 50%. So think about putting those plants that have more need for moist air in areas of your house that are naturally more humid. It's great if you can grab a hygrometer, you can buy them for a few pounds, and you can actually go around testing different areas of your house because you might be surprised where it is moist in terms of the relative humidity of the air. And put those plants that need that moisture in the air in those places. And you can just tell often by looking at a plant whether it needs dry air or moist air. You know, cacti and succulents are adapted to cope with dry air because they have these very succulent leaves or other parts of the plant. You know, a maidenhair fern has got this incredibly filmy leaves and they really cannot cope with low humidity air. So look at your plant and that way it gives you a guide as to what kind of conditions it will thrive in. And oftentimes though, people often struggle with begonias, with Rhizomatous and Rex begonias. And it's an interesting one because people will say, oh, it's because my humidity is not high enough. And oftentimes it's partly that, but it's mainly just that the substrate's wrong. And this is another thing that I go on about a lot is getting the right substrate for your plant. So all my begonias that are Rhizomatous and Rex begonias are grown in what most people would see as a ridiculously free draining substrate. It's very akin to cactus and succulent substrate, which people are very surprised at. But what that means is I can water those plants really generously. I'm a mean waterer as a matter of course, but with my begonias, I water them really generously. But the difference is that water is drawn away from the plant really quickly by that free draining substrate. And so that compensates for the fact that my air in my house is not as moist as it should be. And they grow really, really well. So it's just paying attention to these different factors. You know, if you've got time to think about, okay, I've got this houseplant compost, but maybe I'm going to add a handful of fine orchid bark, or maybe I'm going to add a handful of perlite just to aid getting air into the roots of the plant, because that is often where plants suffer from root rot and then the end is nigh.
you talk there about substrates. I mean, typically, what sort of things are we talking about?
Well, I I'm a great peat-free advocate, so I use, I don't use a houseplant compost. I use Silver Grove by Melcourt with added John Innes, which is a multi-purpose compost, and that's my base for pretty much everything I grow, and then I add things to that. So if I'm growing cacti and succulents, it'll be one part Silver Grove to one part drainage material such as pumice. Grit, perlite. If I'm growing, say, I don't know, an aroid, I might be adding fine orchid bark. I might be adding granules of charcoal. So depending on the plant, I'll be adapting that. But that is my base and it works really, really well. I've been growing houseplants in that for many years. Basically, you know, it works perfectly well. There are loads of ways to grow houseplants. Having said that, lots of people grow them very successfully, growing them just in expanded clay pebbles in a kind of semi-hydroponic setup. People grow them in a lot of cacti and succulent growers grow their cacti and succulents just in pumice. So there's all different ways of doing it. The main thing is that you're paying attention to what that substrate is and how that's going to affect things like watering and feeding.
But you see, now, most people, okay, and I'm sorry, when I say most people, I mean people like me who don't give a great deal of thought to what's coming out of the garden centre into your house. Mm-hmm. It's a bit different with gardening, but outside gardening. But we would just accept, well, it's come in that soil and compost, so that's what it's going to live in, and that's what we feed it on, and you know, feed it through, and all the rest of it.
Yeah, and that's why lots of houseplants die, unfortunately.
Well, now this is interesting. Yeah.
It's sad but true. It's sad but true. A lot of the plants that you buy from non-specialist growers, the substrate they are planted in is okay when you're in a computer-controlled nursery situation.
Absolutely.
So, where the plant, the light and the water and the feeding and the pest control are being done on an industrial scale, and that plant is living its best life, yes, that substrate they've planted it into works perfectly well. When it gets into your house where light is lower, care is erratic, inevitably, because we're human beings, it's not going to work. This is particularly true of cacti and succulents. So if you go to your local supermarket or garden center and buy a cactus, the likelihood is it's going to be in a mix that is quite rich in humus. And probably it's going to be too damp when you buy it, or it'll either be soaking wet, or it'll be so dried out that it'll be like a little sort of block. This is completely wrong for the vast majority of cacti and succulents. Some cacti and succulents can cope better with it. So things like Crassula ovata, the jade plant, very, very tough, will cope. But a lot of other succulents just will not like that mix in the long term in your house. And so it always pays to repot things if you possibly can. So many plants die because people don't realize that. The other thing that's worth saying, I've just done a podcast episode about this, is if you buy orchids in garden centers or supermarkets, you will often find that they have what I call the death plug. So as you know, the only thing I don't plant, use my usual Melcourt Silver Grow on, is orchids. So orchids require a different kind of substrate. They're epiphytes. They live in trees. So they generally grow in pine bark of various consistencies and thicknesses. But when you buy a Phalaenopsis from the supermarket, just a moth orchid, I highly recommend that you, as soon as you get that plant, take it out of the pot, take away the bark, and check what's at the center of that orchid around the sort of where the growth point of the plant. Mm-hmm. And very often you'll find what I call a death plug. And it's a plug, you know, like a plug plant size plug of organic material. And the reason why they do this is because it works, again, it works perfectly well in the nursery, but it will kill your plant. It will kill your plant because it's holding all this moisture at the center of the orchid. And doing the opposite of what I was talking about, that water needs to drain away. So you need to remove that plug and just repot into just orchid bark. You can even just take the bark off, get rid of the plug, and put it back in exactly the same bark. As long as you get rid of that plug, your orchid will do a million times better. But I've done it myself where I've forgotten to check. I was given a beautiful moth orchid last year. I was like, oh, this is so lovely. And then I sort of looked at it and I thought, why is it doing so badly? And then I thought, checked. And of course, death plug. Get rotted roots and all sorts. So depressing. But, you know, unless you know to look, you wouldn't even think of looking. Yeah.
I was just going to say, why do they not tell you this, you know, on the label, you know, replant it in decent substance?
It would be great, wouldn't it? I suspect that most growers don't assume that you're not planning to keep that plant for the long term, that it's kind of like an extended bouquet, that you're going to kill that plant or you're going to chuck it away, and therefore they don't worry about that aspect. Now, one of the things that I'm very passionate about is sustainability, and for me, if I'm buying a plant, I want to have a view that that plant is going to be with me for quite some time. Now, of course, I do kill plants, but it's important to me. And so I would love growers to start doing that, to start giving really clear instructions like that.
Can we just mention buying plants? Because we're coming into winter now. These plants are probably tropical, subtropical. You don't want to be even going to a garden centre and buying them. Stick them in the car, go into town. The car gets cold. And so just enlighten us a little bit on buying house plants.
Exactly. You don't want to waste your money, do you? And it's very easy to make those kind of mistakes. And you buy that poinsettia. Now, my other thing would be, don't buy a poinsettia. And I always get people, there's always a few people who say, well, my poinsettia has been going for 10 years now and I managed to keep it alive. Well, good for you. But the vast, vast majority of people cannot keep that plant alive. Instead, buy a Thanksgiving or a Christmas cactus, because that plant will last you for generations. That's a really good buy. It's a beautiful plant. I may be a little bit anti-poinsettia, but only just because they're so easy to kill and they're hard to keep going from year to year. And if you buy that poinsettia from the market stall that's been outside, it's a Mexican plant. It can cope with a little bit of cold, but not being outside in freezing conditions day after day. So, yeah, think about where that plant's been. And as you say, don't leave it in a cold car. Protect it from drafts. Many, many houseplants come from tropical, subtropical places and will not be happy, even with a few hours of cold drafts flying about them. And then you get them home, you think, gosh, why has it dropped all its leaves? So, yeah, pay attention to that. And just it's about saving money and your sanity, really.
We're talking to Jane Perrone, who is she's a gardening journalist and podcaster. She's also a houseplant expert, among many other things. She's already opened my eyes to one of the reasons why I'm losing houseplants, which is the stuff that it actually comes in. The soil it's planted, the compost it's planted in, is probably not the right substrate for it. And I never even took that into account. And I certainly will.
You don't, Rod, you don't expect to, do you?
No. And
you really don't.
The cynical part of me thinks, well, of course they don't tell you, because they want it to last a few minutes and then you go back and buy another one. So
yeah, they're not trying to help you out. It's also the labeling, you know, when you get the plant that just says foliage plant. You think, well, I knew that. I knew it had leaves. I really needed more in the way of even a common name, or even better, a Latin name or a QR code. I mean, we're in the days of QR codes. Why not have a QR code that people can scan and that takes them to a whole website where they can learn about a plant in detail? It's not rocket science, is it?
You know, do we need that when we have Jane Perrone's houseplant gardener in a box? should we just talk about this? I mean, this is I'm just going to pull one out at random here. You've got it in sections, so you've got succulents, climbing and trailing, flowering, statement. I like that. Leafy and unusual. I'm going to go for, just going to pick out one here. It's loads of cards in there. They're all under these index headings. And if I just pull the first one out, which is amaryllis.
One of the interesting challenges of doing these cards was balancing my own personal plant prejudices against actually making it useful for plants that people grow. So, for example, poinsettia is on one of these cards because people do grow them and want to know how to look after them. So another one there is amaryllis, aka hippiastrum. At this time of year, people are bringing home those bulbs, aren't they, and wanting to know what to do. So I tried to make it a good mix. If it was just my personal preferences, it would be a very different palette of plants, because I'm a bit of a cactus, succulent, begonia, hoya type person. But you can just have hoyas in there. So
I pulled out two, actually. I pulled that one out, and I also pulled out anthurium. They're both very common ones. Some really useful facts and stats and useful information there to help you, like height and spread, water and humidity, the light that it needs, and advice on how to keep it in the right light, minimum temperature, soil. I see. Here we go. A mix of multi-purpose compost and grit at a ratio of 2:1, and do not overpot, as they like their roots snug. And making more mature bulbs will produce offsets, which can be removed and potted up. That's the great joy of outside gardening, isn't it, John? Especially with herbaceous perennials. You know, you can just create more plants and save yourself
loads
of money. And it seems you can do it with house plants as well, which
absolutely. I mean, if you, one of the things I would really recommend, every year on my podcast, we do an annual sow along, because lots of people don't realize that you can grow loads of house plants from seed. And if you can grow tomato plants, you can grow plants, house plants from seed as well. So cacti and succulents, the Swiss cheese plant, you can grow that from seed. You can grow ferns from spores. There are lots of things you can do, and also loads of propagating that you can do. I would say at least a third to a half of my collection come from cuttings that I've either bought or been given. So, yeah, it's really great. It's really fun. It's how you learn about your plants as well.
I'm just trying to think what I know about anthuriums. Well, you have to water the top half of the root ball. It's dry, and it does need high humidity. What else do I know?
You're doing well here.
I am reading your card.
Well, one of the things, I don't know if I mentioned this, it actually, because obviously the other thing is to say is it was absolutely painful to try to compact down information about all these fascinating species into this card. But, you know, as a journalist, that's what I do. But one of the things, I don't know if I mentioned this or not, I don't think I did, but in nature, the anthurium is actually another epiphyte. So these actually grow in trees. They don't grow terrestrially on the ground. They grow in trees. And that, in a way, makes them a good house plant because they have quite small root balls and they like that dry, wet cycle that we tend to end up giving our houseplants. But they are very beautiful. And I think these are, I mean, again, forget the poinsettias, buy one of these. I think they're gorgeous for Christmas.
Oh, absolutely. They look stunning. Poinsettias, I very often get one before Christmas. It goes in the wheelie bin on the last day. They are for 12 days of the year and the poinsettias, and that's it.
If you've ever seen them growing in the wild in Mexico, they're amazing. They're absolutely beautiful. They're shrubs. They're big shrubs. And they just really struggle in our homes. They don't like cold drafts. They're very prone to dropping those colourful bracts. And they are a light, they are a day-length sensitive plant. So if you have managed to keep one going from year to year, it's because you are exposing that plant to changing day length and they react to the shortening days by producing those red bracts. So it's a bit of a palaver, to be honest, to get them through year to year. But again, I always sort of have a caveat because there'll always be somebody watching who says, well, mine's doing lovely. And you sort of think, well, yeah, your exception that proves the rule.
You mentioned lighting there. I mean, what about artificial lighting? I mean, if you have houseplants that need that light, do you supplement with LED lights or some sort of
light? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the LED grow lights now are coming down in price and improving in reliability. And you can buy individual bulbs that fit into normal light fittings, which is great. So, for example, in my front room, I've got a floor lamp, which has got a bulb in it, which is an LED grow light. So it provides the right spectrum of light. So if you have a normal light bulb, it doesn't really supply the right spectrum of light that houseplants need to grow. So it will only have a very, very minimal effect on your plants. But if you buy one of these specialist LED grow lights and they come in strip form and also as light bulbs, you can buy ones that are plate shaped that you can suspend over plants. There's all kinds of ways of setting it up. They really do help at this time of year, supplementing plants so that they can get through the winter without becoming too stretched. So they're really worth considering. What I would say
very
is
cheap to, you, very cheap to you, run as well with the LED.
Very cheap. You get what you pay for. So do not buy the really cheap ones from, you know, that you often find. If you Google LED grow lights, you think, oh, that's a really good deal. That's so cheap. It's probably not a very good quality light. It will probably break quite quickly and none of the parts will be replaceable. So in the long run, it's not a very wise investment. You're better off spending a bit more if you can. Invest in good quality grow lights and they will last much longer. A lot of the technology that we're talking about here comes from the cannabis growing world. So the cannabis growers for years have been developing this technology for grow rooms for cannabis. So It's interesting how there's the crossover. I'm not suggesting people should be, you know, growing cannabis, but what I'm saying is that technology has been developed in that industry and crossed over into the houseplant world.
Yeah,
and we're reaping the benefits from that.
Don't be putting too many in your house, otherwise you'll have helicopters flying over.
Well, indeed. I mean, not until quite recently, a lot of grow lights tended to be these really purple ones, which are really not very nice, and you may well get the police knocking on your door if you have those. But now these daylight LEDs have been developed, and they're very, very good. And the light is ideal for plants, providing a good spectrum for leaf growth and also flower development. And they don't look appalling either. So, yeah, don't go for the purple ones. They give you a headache.
Can we just talk about watering? Because I know that you're going to say, well, this is to a certain extent it's plant specific, but one of the tips I picked up from John actually was to make sure that you don't use tap water straight out of the tap, which is something again that I always did, thinking, oh, it's perfectly fine,
particularly in the winter
yeah, when it's absolutely icy cold. So just give us a steer on watering.
So tap water, it really depends where you live. So if you come from, I grew up in the Chilterns with super hard water. I live in Bedfordshire with fairly hard water. So I'm lucky enough to have outside space and quite a few water butts. So all my houseplant water comes from those water butts. It's all rainwater, and that's ideal for houseplants. In the summer, obviously, it's fine. I have milk delivered, so I just use the empty milk bottles and fill those up. And in the summer, obviously, they just could be watered straight on. In the winter, I will bring those inside, let them reach room temperature, which can take a few hours before I water them onto the plants. Not many plants are going to want the shock of freezing cold water on them. The other thing I occasionally do, like I did today, actually, was something desperately needs watering. So I get the water in and put it in the microwave for a minute just to get it just to the right temperature to really benefit the plants. So watering is really important. The main thing I can say is it's very, very tempting, and I do this often, but it can backfire. You see a plant, you think, oh, gosh, it needs watering. So you chuck some water on, and your plant is probably planted into a nursery, plastic nursery pot with an outer cover pot of maybe china around it. And you chuck some water on, and you think, job done, job's a good one. But what often happens is you've left water in the bottom of that cover pot, and effectively you've left the plant sitting in a puddle of water. The result is usually root rot, because the soil becomes saturated, air can't reach those roots, and the plant starts to wilt because root rot's happening. So you think, oh, the plant's wilting, it needs more water. So you give it some more water and you make the root rot worse. So if you can, it's really good practice to take the plants out of their cash pots, take the nursery pot, either take them to the sink, the bath, the shower, or get a big plastic old washing up bowls. And my friend, I've got loads of them. Just have a few plants sat in there, then you can water. And when you water, again, I'm generalizing here, but it's true for so many houseplants, is rather than just dribbling water on now and again, give them a really good soak. Make sure that whole root ball has been moistened, and then allow the plant to drain thoroughly before you put it back. And then allow the roots to the soil to pretty much dry out before you water again. That way, the plant will tend to be happier than if you dribble water on the top every now and again, because that's encouraging the plant to grow roots up to the surface rather than down. So yeah, watering is one of those things that people worry about. Oh, should I water on the top or the bottom? You know, again, just remember to water, and remember to check your plant when you've watered to make sure that you're not leaving it in loads of water, because that can cause so many problems.
Can I mention just one other thing? We go around the house and we take a duster, and we, you know, they do the tops of the furniture and stuff like that. Plants also get covered in dust, and so how do you cope with that? With the big leaves, of course, you can give them a nice wipe with a damp cloth, which also helps things like a bit of humidity. But how do you go on with that, Jane?
Yeah, well, you know, I'm not averse to certain cacti and succulents get hoovered, literally get hoovered. when I bring some of them in the autumn, it's quite handy to have the hoover to hand if they've got cobwebs on them and dead plant material that's fallen onto them. Otherwise, with cacti and succulents, you can use a clean, soft paintbrush or makeup brush and just brush the dust off them. If you've got big, lush-leaved plants, as you say, damp cloth, damp rag, if you can use distilled water, if your water's very hard, use distilled water or rainwater, because you don't want to add marks to those leaves as the water dries and leaves a film of mineral salts on there. Don't use leaf shine sprays. They're just not helping your plant at all. No. Plants have got breathing holes called stomata on their surface, and effectively those leaf shines are just blocking those holes. Leaves on the whole, there are a few exceptions, but leaves on the whole are not glossy, super shiny in nature. That kind of thing just doesn't exist. And so we've got this false idea about what those leaves should look like. But yeah, generally... And also the other thing to say is pay attention to the backs of your leaves when you're dusting and cleaning them, because the backs of the leaves are often where pests are gathering and damage is first seen. My other top tip with houseplants, and this is, I don't think I've got one on my desk to show you, but a hand lens or a magnifying glass is a massively useful thing for houseplants, because so many of the pests that we get on houseplants, the various life parts of the life cycle are not visible to the naked eye, especially, you know, as we get older, you know, you wouldn't see them anyway. Red spider mite, not visible to the naked eye. And lots of the smaller instars of things like thrips and aphids, you probably won't spot them. So a hand lens is really valuable. Get in there with a hand lens, look at the backs of your leaves, and you might find that you can stop an infestation in its tracks by having that to hand. It's really useful.
Interesting.
There we are. Look
yes,
here.
There you go.
That's where he was going. I wonder where you were going, banging around. Looking for his magnifying glass.
It was just on the other shelf, so
I've got loads. I mean, there's all different ones you can buy. I've got one that's got an LED light built in, which is really handy, different magnifications, but yeah, anything like that. It doesn't have to be a specialist botanist's one. It can just be any magnifier. You can even use your phone if you're so minded to do this. It really helps.
Now, should we talk about feeding before we wrap up? Just a quick session on feeding, because again, I guess it's plant specific, but it would be useful to know what you use. I think, again, I'm speaking as the rank amateur when it comes to houseplants, and I will probably go for the old baby bio stuff. And I'm sure that's probably not ideal for all.
Well,
plants.
I mean, to be honest, if the main thing is just to remember to feed, like the number of people who say, I've never fed my houseplants. So just having something on hand, it's not, you get people who get very tied up in knots about, oh, you must use this particular, this is no good and this is good. Don't get too tied up in that. Just remember to feed. And the rule is the plant actively growing? Is the plant putting on growth? Regardless of the time of year, a lot of tropical plants will be growing all year round. So I need to be feeding that plant regularly when it's in active growth. And, you know, there are obviously two types of fertilizer you can get for houseplants, roughly speaking, synthetic and organic. And if you are going to use organic fertilizers like seaweed feed on indoor plants, what you need to remember is those nutrients are not automatically available to the plant. They need to be converted by microorganisms in the soil. So that means you need to have quite, in inverted commas, dirty soil. So if you've just treated all of your houseplants with a pesticide and then you try using a seaweed feed, it's not going to work because there's not enough microorganisms in that soil to turn the feed you've just applied into something that's accessible to the plants. So think about that. Think about remembering to feed regularly. Just again, it sounds ridiculously simple, but I know I don't do this all the time. Read the instructions. Make sure you give the right measurement. And there's all different kinds of feeds available, from slow release that you can add when you pot up to liquids that you add every time you water or at certain intervals. the only plants that you really need to do something different with are things like orchids, cacti and succulents, and carnivorous plants, which have very specific nutrient needs because of the way they've evolved. So those, the carnivorous plants generally don't need feeding, and the orchids and the cacti and succulents need specialist feeds. But just remember to do it is what I'd mainly say, and just follow the instructions. It sounds really obvious, but again, people are like, well, I just put this, but well, have you realized that needs to be diluted? You know, it happens that people don't always get it right. So I've used many different feeds over the years. I've used Baby Bio, absolutely fine. I've at the moment I'm using one called Liquid Gold Leaf, which is very, very good, and comes with a little pipette that you add to a liter of water. There's loads of options out there, but just remember to do it is the main thing. And but don't kill them with kindness as well. Just like outdoor plants, you know, when you're doing your containers outside, they can be damaged by too much feed. So yeah, that's just absolutely bearing in mind as well.
I must say I'm a phostrogen because it's a complete food with all the trace elements as well.
Yeah, I mean, everybody has their own preferences as to what they find works for them. Everyone has their loyalties, and you often find, you know, cactus and succulent people often use the Kempac cactus and succulent feed again. And then if you speak to younger people who are into aroids or other particular sort of trendy houseplants, they'll have their own specific things that they're into. Growth Technologies, another brand that's out there. Again, it's just a question of finding something that works for you, I think.
Wow, we've covered a lot of ground, and I've learned so much, Jane. This has been fantastic. And
well, as I say, this is what I love sharing. I mean, this is just my absolute favourite thing to do, and it's oftentimes this knowledge is something that, you know, you get from being around plants and being around people who are into plants. But hopefully this Houseplant Gardener in a Box product will kind of condense some of that into a nicer, attractive resource that people can use.
Okay, let's talk about how we can get this Houseplant Gardener in a Box.
It's being produced by Skittledog, who are an imprint of Thames and Hudson, so it should be in all good bookstores, as they say, and do support your local bookstore or garden center. Of course, it's also available on the big online stores as well. I've seen people have reported that they've seen it in Korea and Finland so far. So it's going around the world. So you should be able to easily get a copy. And all the details are on my website, janeperrone.com.
Yes, lovely website. And you have a podcast as well.
So if you're not sick of the sound of my voice, on the ledge, there's more than 270 episodes about all kinds of houseplanty stuff, again, at janeperrone.com, or you can subscribe on the usual pod apps.
Wow, Jane, it's been a privilege and an honour to have you on as our guest this week, and hope you can do it again, because I'm sure people would love to hear from you again as well.
My pleasure.
Thank you for your time. And thanks once again to our sponsors, Fitzgerald Lane Decorators. That's LAING for a free quote and advice on any project. Go to their Facebook group, Fitzgerald Lane Decorators. Please do subscribe to our Loving Your Garden podcast. Check out our previous episodes and tell your gardening friends all about us. Bye-bye. Until next time.
Bye, folks.
Bye.